This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County. I'm here today with my wife, Lynn, and want to remind you that this is a listener-supported station, and it's brought to you by you, so we need your help and your donations. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about us, as you know, you can always go to CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. That's our website, and you'll get a lot of information about us there and information on how to make a donation if you would like to do that, and we can use all the help we can get, especially during the summer months. And, of course, those summer months are ending, and we have gone through the Labor Day weekend. Lynn and I were gone for that weekend, and I'm sure a lot of you people traveled and did things over the Labor Day weekend. We hope you had a great Labor Day weekend, and you're ready to begin the fall. I know Lynn and I certainly are after all the heat, and it's rainy. We've had some rain here, but it feels pretty good to be cool, and I think it's going to get sunny again and straighten out. Maybe we'll have some real nice weather. I hope we get a real nice, dry, and long fall.
Yes, pretty colors.
That's for sure. That is always nice to see, the change in seasons. And I'm glad we live somewhere where the change in seasons happen, because I don't think I would really care to live somewhere, would you, Lynn, where you don't get that change?
Our daughter Suzanne lives in Texas, down near Austin, and she said the last time we talked to her about a week ago, she was tired of the heat. She was tired of the sunshine every day and no change of scenery. And she's been down there, what, 4 years, 5 years?
Something like that now, yeah.
It's finally catching up to her that it's much different there in the weather and so forth.
And I do want to remind everybody also that the St. John trip is coming up. The Catholic Spirit Radio is sponsoring, and that's September 22nd. It'll be in a few weeks. And there are a few bus seats left, so if you would like to go on that trip, check with our website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com. You'll get more information about it there, but you can still get a seat yet. So you want to make sure you do that if you can. My wife has been on a trip about 3 years ago or so, and she said it was a really great trip. They really enjoyed it. So it's something to do in the fall that you would probably enjoy, and it's a nice day trip where you can be somewhere and back in the same day. Not a lot of traveling, not too far to go, just over in Indiana, not too far from Gary, right up in that area. So check into that, and if you can make that trip, be sure to go. At any rate, we better get started. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there, as Burt Reynolds said in his role in Smokey and the Bandit. And we're sort of in the same position now. And pray for Burt. He's gone, and he gave us a lot of good entertainment. And so we'll start in. We were going to finish up Why Matter Matters today. I don't think we're going to be able to make it. We are going to talk a little bit about the scandal that's been going on. It's a hot topic. Everybody's been talking about it. Usually, we don't get into topics like that too much, but I think in this case, we have some things that we would like to bring up and contribute, and the laity needs, in this instance, to get involved. All of you people out there, I know in our parish, we were asked by our priest to get involved, to, if we have comments and ideas, to write to the bishop. Of course, always be polite and civil, and even to the Vatican if necessary. But as he said, this whole thing has to be rooted out to the very root, and we need to help in doing that as much as we can. And so ideas need to be brought in, and we think there's a big role for the laity in that. That's been talked about somewhat. We will not talk about that too much, but we will bring in some other things along that line. Is there anything you want to say before we get started, Lynn?
No, I think we should get started because the time is flying.
Yes, it is. At any rate, the topics that we will bring up a little bit will be the death penalty, Pope Francis's pronouncement on the death penalty and his change in the catechism, and how that might relate in some ways to the scandal, how it crossed our minds. And also not only the death penalty, but some articles about it from the National Catholic Register. There's a good article in Chronicles Magazine by Aaron Wolf, who is one of our Protestant friends. He writes for that magazine, and the magazine is put out by the Rockford Institute, which leans predominantly Catholic, a lot of Catholics on that. So a lot of his colleagues and good friends are Catholic, and he weighs in on that. He's very knowledgeable about the Catholic Church, knows a lot about its history, about the tradition, and about some of the saints and that kind of thing, and he will weigh on it a little bit. There is some controversy over that as well, and I think it, in some ways, Lynn and I think that it relates to the scandal, or could at least relate to the scandal. So we will talk about that as well. I want to read a paper also before we start here by Bishop Athanasius Schneider. And Athanasius Schneider is a bishop, I think, of St. Mary's Diocese, or Archdiocese, I think, in, I think it's a part of Italy. I'm not sure on that. But he was one of the ones that wrote in about the change of thinking concerning Amoris Laetitia, and one of the bishops who signed the dubia. That is, a dubia is, you know, asking the Pope questions for clarification about what he means about Amoris Laetitia. He's sort of in a church, a traditionalist or conservative, I guess some people would say, Athanasius Schneider is. You might note his name, Athanasius, and Athanasius was one of the early bishops of the church who opposed the Arian heresy, and that was way back in the 3rd or 4th century, back at that time, or 5th century in there. And he was called a nickname, and it was called Athanasius Contra Mundum, and that was Athanasius against the world, because he would not give in to the Arian heresy, which taught that Christ was the greatest of all creatures, but that he wasn't on the same level as God. And that was a heresy that plagued the church for a long, long time. And it took a lot of work and effort and sometimes guts to oppose the popular misconception. And Athanasius did that. So it could be the name Athanasius applies in this case as well, because Bishop Schneider has come out questioning some things about the Pope. And I'll read this paper that he has written, and then we'll go from there, Lynn.
Okay.
And here's what he writes from Bishop Athanasius Schneider, and he's the Bishop of Astana. And again, I'm not sure exactly where that's at, but I know he's a very conservative or traditional bishop in the church. And I would assume it's probably somewhere in Italy. I wanted to look that up this morning, and just didn't have time to do that. But I do have the letter here. And he says, "It is a rare and extremely grave fact in church history that a bishop accuses publicly and specifically a reigning pope. In a recently published document from August 22, 2018, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano testifies that since 5 years, Pope Francis had known two facts: that Cardinal Theodore McCarrick committed sex offenses against seminarians and against his subordinates, and that there are sanctions which Pope Benedict XVI imposed on him. Furthermore, Archbishop Vigano confirmed his statement by a sacred oath invoking the name of God. And then, according to Bishop Athanasius, he says, there is, therefore, no reasonable and plausible cause to doubt the truth content of the document of Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano. And we should remember that Carlo Maria Vigano was appointed papal nuncio to the United States by Pope Benedict XVI. And I think he, even in coming out here and talking about this issue, Cardinal Vigano pointed out that at the time that he was sent to the United States, he was somewhat afraid for his life over in the Vatican area. So,
yeah,
I mean,
we have to look. He was involved in exposing the crimes and the laundering of money that was accused. Well, let's put it this way: the Vatican Bank was accused of laundering money. he's the one that exposed all that was going on in the bank. The Pope had asked him to investigate that and do it, and he did it. So he's known as a big snitch over there among the Curia.
So this is a pretty serious charge that Vigano is making, and he also is a person who has been in authority and has a reputation, you know, for being someone you can trust or rely on, or at least, you know, someone who knows what is going on. He's not some kind of a nut or something from the fringes of the church. So since because of that important position he's been in and so forth, we have to take what he says seriously. And so I'll go ahead and read what Athanasius says about this. And Athanasius, of course, is, you know, Bishop Athanasius Schneider is taking this very seriously. And so further from the letter, Catholics all over the world, the simple faithful, the little ones, are deeply shocked and scandalized about recently disclosed grave cases in which church authorities covered and protected clerics who committed sexual offenses against minors and against their own subordinates. Such an historical situation, which the church is experiencing in our days, requires absolute transparency on all levels of church's hierarchy, and in the first place, evidently, on behalf of the Pope. So, in other words, he's saying we should all take this very, very seriously, and I think, of course, we are, and the Pope should, of course, be taking this very seriously, too. And that's why later on, I think the Pope's pronouncement on the death penalty will come into play. It is completely insufficient and unconvincing that church authorities continue to formulate general appeals for a zero tolerance in the cases of clerical sexual abuses and for a stop of covering such cases. And I agree 100% with this. Of course, you know, obviously we should be invoking a 0% tolerance, and we have done a very good job in the United States after the scandal in the church against minors, of protecting minors. And so we have done a very good job there. But we have to go further than that, especially in this case where the accusations are being made against the hierarchy, against the people who are higher ups in the church. And so we can't just have appeals for zero tolerance and ask for forgiveness and so forth for these people. That's not enough. Equally insufficient are the stereotype pleas for forgiveness on behalf of church authorities, and that's what I was getting at. Such appeals for zero tolerance and pleas for forgiveness will become credible only if the authorities of the Roman Curia will lay the cards on the table, giving the names and surnames of all those in the Roman Curia, independent of their rank and title, who covered the cases of sexual abuse of minors and subordinates. And that's what we as the laity have to demand. And I think we also, I've heard on Cresta in the afternoon here on Catholic Spirit Radio from EWTN, has also called for the same thing, that we're going to have lay people involved, trustworthy, responsible lay people, you know, who have knowledge in these areas and that kind of thing, certainly. But these people are going to have access to what's going on in this investigation, and they're going to have to press for transparency. And Lynn will bring up later on that that can also be a very dangerous thing in the church. I mean, we're living in dangerous times. They've happened before. This is nothing new in the history of the church. It has had crises as this, and we need to handle it. And this is, you know, what we're getting at here in this show. So he's saying these people have to be exposed. And he says, from the documents of Archbishop Vigano, one can draw the following conclusions: that the Holy See and the Pope himself must start to cleanse uncompromisingly the Roman Curia and the Episcopate from homosexual cliques and networks. And we certainly would agree with that. That the Pope must proclaim unambiguously the divine doctrine about the grievously sinful character of homosexual acts. And I agree with that also. We need to start talking about these things, and we need to start talking about sin in the parishes and in the churches and by the priests. We too long have been influenced by the world that has seeped in to the Catholic culture and to the Catholic churches and the Catholic teaching, and I agree with that. That there will have to be issued peremptory and detailed norms which will prevent the ordination of men with a homosexual tendency. And I can understand that that may be controversial. I heard a woman on Cresta the other day talking about how she hoped that this wouldn't go against the good homosexual priests. The fact is, if a person has homosexual tendencies and they are acting, you know, in accordance with ordinary morals and they are not acting on those things, they are not in sin. But on the other hand, I don't think, and I agree with this, that people with this sort of disorder, and it is a disorder and a defect in the human nature, a part of the natural law, a defect, and I'll explain more about natural law if I have the time. It's not what most people think it is. That this could be a problem for the church, one, because the tendencies, you know, some of these people will act on them, and number two, that even if they don't, there will be other people that will and can implicate them or threaten to implicate them because they will know a lot of times who they are. And this can cause them to be less than forthcoming about things that are going on, and we'll be right back into that syndrome again. So I know that's going to be controversial with the kind of society we have today and its wrongful beliefs, but we're going to have to face it. Number four, that the Pope restores the purity and unambiguity of the entire Catholic doctrine in teaching and preaching. Number five, that there will be restored in the Church through papal and episcopal teaching and through practical norms the ever-valid Christian ascesis, that is, the exercises of fasting, corporal penitence, and abnegations of self, that is, self-denial. That there will be restored in the Church the spirit and the praxis of reparation and expiation for sins committed. In other words, temporal atonement for our sins in the here and now. That there will start in the Church a securely guaranteed selection process of candidates to the episcopacy who are demonstrably true men of God, and that it would be better to leave the diocese several years without a bishop rather than to appoint a candidate who is not a true man of God in prayer, in doctrine, and in moral life. Remember, the Church itself is feminine. It's the bride of Christ, and we need masculinity to represent Christ because he was masculine, to marry the bride of Christ, and that's what a priest does. He takes the Church as his bride, and so that is a masculine thing to do. It's a sacrament of marriage, and it's a sacrament of ordination, and we need to return to that. That there will start in the Church a movement, especially among cardinals, bishops, and priests, to renounce any compromise and any flirt with the world. And I'm going to talk a little bit about John when we come back, 15, where Christ talks about our being out of this world but not in it. And finally, he says, one would not be surprised when the mainstream oligarchical international media, which promotes homosexuality and moral depravity, will start to denigrate the person of Archbishop Vigano and to let disappear the core issue of his document into the sand. So we're going to have to stop here and take a break, but we will come back and talk about this paper, about the scandal, and a few more things, and about the Pope's pronouncement on the death penalty, and see how some of these things tie together. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Join Catholic Spirit Radio for a pilgrimage to the Shrine of Christ's Passion in St. John, Indiana on Saturday, September 22nd. You will feel as though you have been transported back to the time of Christ. The Shrine's Way of the Cross includes 40 life-size bronze figures placed in gardens that look and feel like the Holy Land. A few bus seats are still available. If you're quick, you can join Catholic Spirit Radio for this exciting pilgrimage. Call to check availability at 309-830-4164.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic. We're back from our break. We've been talking a little bit about the church scandal and about the letter that Bishop Athanasius Schneider has written concerning the scandal in the church, and some of the things that he says that need to be drawn from the document of Archbishop Vigano. and some of the things that he thinks needs to be done. And one of the things that I mentioned that I would come back to, and that is the idea of we have let the world too much into our lives as Catholics. We've let the outside culture too much into our thinking and too much into our church. And I think that's something that we're all guilty of, myself, I think just about everybody, and the clergy and the clerical people in the church as well, into our parishes, into our church in general, into our diocese. And we have to start moving away from that, and we have to start realizing that a lot of the so-called tolerance teaching and compassion teaching of our modern society has gone awry, that any virtue, if it's emphasized without restraining virtues, counter virtues for balance, can become a vice. And we have to start taking that seriously and facing that situation and understand that there are some hard decisions that are going to have to be made. And so we want to talk about that. Again, I'll reiterate that one point that Bishop Athanasius Schneider makes, and he says that there will start in the church a movement, especially among cardinals, bishops, and priests, to renounce any compromise and any flirt with the world. And we have let the world in too much. I think I'll refer back to some of my literary training when I was in college, and it just brings to mind the poet Wordsworth, and William Wordsworth, and, you know, when he says, "The world is too much with us. In getting and spending, we lay waste our powers." And I think that's what Christ was driving at here in John 15. And it's John 15:18, the world's hatred. And he says, if the world hates you, this is what Jesus is talking, and John is quoting, if the world hates you, realize that it hated me first. If you belong to the world would love its own. But because you do not belong to the world, and I have chosen you out of the world hates you. Remember the word I spoke to you. No slave is greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will also keep yours. And they will do all these things to you on account of my name, because they do not know the one who sent me. If I had not come and spoken to them, they would have no sin. But as it is, they have no excuse for their sin. Whoever hates me also hates my Father. If I had not done works among them that no one else ever did, they would not have sin. But as it is, they have seen and hated both me and my Father. But in order that the word written in their law might be fulfilled, they hated me without a cause. When the Advocate comes, whom I will send you from the Father, the Spirit of truth that proceeds from the Father, he will testify to me, and you also testify, because you have seen me from the beginning. And this is what Athanasius Schneider is talking about. He's talking about we have to quit allowing too much of the world to come into our churches and our lives, and too much of the world's pronouncement on morality and the world's pronouncement on how on what tolerance is and what compassion is, and start thinking in terms of the church's history and the tradition that has been handed down to us. About morality and compassion and tolerance, and understand it from a Catholic point of view if we are going to not only solve these problems in our church, but solve these problems in the modern world. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Lynn, and let you make some comments on that.
Okay. First of all, I agree with him, and I think that the laity is going to have to become very involved in this, since the hierarchy of the church can't seem to police itself. But there's a danger in that. When you have others come in and take over and make those decisions, where does that leave the hierarchy of the church? It leaves it open to outsiders coming in, taking over, and especially the states coming in, the governments coming in and making the decisions for the church. And we can't have that either. So, you know, we're in a very dangerous spot in history here.
I agree with that 100%, and I'm glad you brought it up, because that is one of the dangers of what we're calling for, of what Mr. Cresta was calling for on his show on Catholic Spirit Radio, you know, from EWTN. The church is a hierarchy, and Western civilization was built on the Catholic Church and on a hierarchy. And when you destroy it and make everything democratic, you also leave in the vagaries of public opinion, and you can bring a lot of dangers to the church. Nevertheless, as Lynn agrees and I agree, it still has to be done, but it has to be done with great, great caution.
Yes. Wasn't it in Paul? I should have looked this up, and I apologize for not doing so. It just struck me this morning that, wasn't it Paul or was it Jesus himself, warned against taking our legal problems and stuff outside of the church to take him, I think it was said, to the pagans, meaning non-believers, and letting them make decisions. It shouldn't be done that way. So, you know, the members of the church should become involved and do things, but you're going to have to be careful on who you choose to do it.
And I've talked on this before, that the separation of church and state is, first of all, you know, never really is what it seems to be, that there is always the state, in effect, can become the church, and usually does, and that in the early Christianity there was a distinction between the state and the church, but the church had much more authority. Now, sometimes it was too much state authority was given over to the church, and then it's bad for the church, and vice versa. If too much is given over to the state, it's bad for the state and for the church as well, so it's a very fine line that has to be walked. And again, the fact is the church is a hierarchy, and you certainly don't want to destroy the authority of the hierarchy. But on the other hand, there's too much worldliness has moved into the church, and there is this, in our opinion, Lynn and I's opinion, and probably in many others, you might disagree, that there's too much special pleading on behalf of the hierarchy, called clericalism sometimes, in which, you know, oh, let us handle it. Well, the fact is that even though I think the protection of the young was done very well in the United States, that among the hierarchy itself and the upper levels of the hierarchy, not nearly enough was done, and it's impossible for them to handle this on their own. They have been compromised, and so the laity has to be involved, or there will simply be no credibility to this investigation.
Yeah, unless you think that this is just going on in Rome, we have to look at the Chicago Archdiocese. I just heard this week, it was reported by National Catholic News, that two priests from the Archdiocese of Chicago were arrested in Florida by police who had found them engaged in their homosexual behavior in a semi-private place, or rather, probably in the car. So these two priests are part of the vicarate. You know, they aren't the pastors of the church, but they, you know, do assist the pastor of the church. It just goes to show you that, right, these two guys are serving in the same parish. So what does that tell you? Seems to me that, you know, even in the diocese that close, that this behavior is going on here, it's still going on here. And I think that's very frightening. You know, what allows these guys to be two of them? And I sure hope this parish does not have a school, but I would lay a bet that it does, since there are three priests there. It must be a pretty big congregation.
This came out of the Catholic News Service, didn't it?
You're right, it did.
So what's important here to remember is that in situations like this, we have a liberalism, if you might, modernism in the country today that doesn't think that there's anything wrong with this, and so you will not have the kind of investigation by the lay and secular news service as good as you will with a good church news service. And so this is one of the problems, and we'll talk about what might be said about the Pope's pronouncements on the death penalty and his talk about the environment and how this may tie in in effect, the liberal news media might almost step in and want to defend these priests in certain situations, even though, of course, they attacked the church and the priesthood prior when there was these pronouncements against priests for taking advantage of people underage, you know, of adolescents. They might not step in and do that if this is a consensual practice among themselves, because there's this idea that it seems to be almost anything is acceptable, any immorality is acceptable among secular thinking as long as it's consensual. That seems to be the key trick, is that if it's consensual, everything's okay. Somehow it doesn't hurt anybody else. It's only when it's non-consensual that somehow it's bad. And so we've got a media that has, a problem, a hole, a lacuna in their thinking along that line. And you could get contrary to what you would think, instead of being against the priests in situations like this, or at least feeling that they need to expose this kind of behavior, they might instead stonewall and defend it. So these are all kinds of problems that are coming in. And you might be curious as to how the pronouncement on the death penalty fits in here, but we'll get at that.
Yeah,
we'll get at that. Do you want to say anything more on this, Lynn? And I'll move on to that next topic.
No, go ahead.
Okay, but at any rate, everyone's also aware, I'm sure, of the change in the catechism by Pope Francis on the death penalty. He's come out and introduced into the catechism that the death penalty is inadmissible, and we're going to talk a little bit about that and how that might be interpreted by not just people within the church, but modern society, and especially, you know, the liberal end side of modern society, and how it could be a factor in the investigation that has to go on. So I'll mention some of the things that are being said both by Catholics and by our Protestant critics about that pronouncement. Let me read a little bit from an article by Aaron Wolf in Chronicles, a magazine of culture, and the magazine is put out pretty much by the Rockford Institute, which is heavily weighted on the Catholic side, although it's a secular magazine, and of course they have writers who are not Catholic. Aaron Wolf is one of them. But he's very knowledgeable about the Catholic Church's history and so forth.
And
the Church Fathers. And he says here, and I think we get this controversy, he's going to take this one side, and there's going to be the same division within the Church itself that I'll get to from the Catholic Register. So it says here, Pope Francis is wrong to change the catechism of the Catholic Church to suit his postmodern anti-biblical leanings, making capital punishment utterly inadmissible in civil society, like hearsay evidence in court. And that's the charge that Aaron Wolf is making, and with some good reasons, all too, that he gives. This issue transcends Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox debates over doctrine, he's saying. And I agree with him. Because the Pope has great influence the world over, this change in Catholic teaching, it is beyond the shadow of a doubt a change. There are some within the church debating this that say that it isn't. I happen to agree with Aaron Wolf that it is, and there are many Catholics within the church also in among the hierarchy that say that it is a change. At any rate, he says, this change will further the harm wrought in Western countries where capital punishment is already banned. It will also motivate American politicians eager to please Catholic voters who will now seek to ban the death penalty where it still exists. And you see, now we're bringing politics into it, and that's what I was pointing out, how this kind of his pronouncement on the death penalty can bring politics in that will actually have an effect on the investigation of the scandal. In other words, there will be people, and Lynn can comment on this more, and it certainly has crossed my mind, who might be thinking and will be thinking that perhaps Francis did this to deflect criticism away from the hierarchy and away from maybe himself and the church, and that he's putting up a smokescreen here. These are kinds of things that are going to be brought up. I haven't heard this said, by Cresta or any of the Catholic commentators on EWTN. That doesn't mean they haven't. I just haven't heard it. I don't hear everything. But this came across my mind, and I think more people need to think about it. You were saying something?
It came immediately across my mind that this is a smokescreen. Not that it doesn't need to be discussed and decided and so forth, but it's a smokescreen to cover up this and the pronouncement on the environment and the plastics and the water. Yes, it needs to be controlled, and things do need to change. But why now, right in the middle of this all?
This is what came across my mind as well. And, of course, it will come across people's minds who are anti-Catholic or anti-church or whatever the case might be, and they will probably vocalize it. Now, of course, Lynn and I are not charging that this is the case, but we're saying this is what, you know, the first thing that comes across your mind when you think of it in times like this, and it will certainly come across the minds of others. At any rate, Aaron Wolf goes on. He's making a case, in fact, you know, for the death penalty being traditionally Catholic and also biblical. And he says, we need more, not less, of the death penalty, and not for the reasons commonly cited, the straw men which the Pope seemingly addresses with his new teaching. He says, every lasting human society has written into song, poem, story, and positive legal statutes the moral principles common to all mankind. Among these are laws forbidding crimes against the dignity of mankind, such as murder and rape, which have been universally deemed capital offenses. And most people don't realize rape used to be a capital offense at one time in many, many countries because you're taking something away from a woman that she can't get back. And that's an assault against her dignity, and capital punishment is seen in that light, not as an attack against human dignity, but a restoration of it. So you've got some very serious conflicts going on here. We're going to have to stop here and take a break. I'm going to come back and talk about this a little bit more, and then we'll get into, as you were talking, Lynn, a little bit more about the fact how this can be a political issue, and people can charge that the Pope is using it. Well, maybe he's not. I don't know, but it's crossed my mind to deflect criticism away from himself and away from the hierarchy. So it's a very complex issue that we're in today. But we're going to take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Join Catholic Spirit Radio for a pilgrimage to the Shrine of Christ's Passion in St. John, Indiana on Saturday, September 22nd. You will feel as though you have been transported back to the time of Christ. The Shrine's Way of the Cross includes 40 life-size bronze figures placed in gardens that look and feel like the Holy Land.
A few bus seats are still available. If you're quick, you can join Catholic Spirit Radio for this exciting pilgrimage. Call to check availability at 309-830-4164.
Hi, this is John Hall, president of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. With the summer months upon us, we've seen a decrease in giving to Catholic Spirit Radio. I'm coming to you today to ask you for your help in making up the shortfall and helping us advance this ministry. If you feel God is calling you to bless this ministry, we could sure use your help. Whether it's an extra $5 or $5,000, we could use your help and advance the ministry of Catholic Spirit Radio. You can donate online at CatholicSpiritRadio.com or via mail. Our address is Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Again, that's 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761, or online at CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Thank you from Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM, and we're back from our break, and we're talking about some big issues here on the show today. And I hope it's of great interest to you, and you're listening out there, and we'll think about these things. We all need to. At any rate, Aaron Wolf is going on to point out that for a long time in Catholic tradition and history, the death penalty has been looked upon as not only as permissible, but also as a means of justice. And it says, of course, in Scripture, when God tells Noah's sons after the deluge and they are very sinful people themselves, but he tells them bluntly and plainly, whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. And so therefore, he's saying in effect that there are people, and himself included, that are going to charge the Pope as acting against Catholic tradition and against Scripture in this. And he goes on, when the Lord commands thou shalt not kill, he's not contradicting himself, because the Hebrew word means murder, not kill in the abstract. And we also have this political involvement in it, because some people say, well, how can the Catholic Church teach against abortion when it approves of the death penalty, or, you know, that considers the death penalty could be just and so forth. And by the Pope coming out, you know, saying the death penalty is impermissible, it will give us more strength to be against abortion. But the fact is we have to remember that there is a huge difference, not a similarity, between abortion and capital punishment. I mean, abortion is a capital crime against innocent people. It's murder. It's taking the life of innocent children, unborn children. And when we execute a murderer, we are certainly not executing someone who is innocent. And an execution is not the same thing as murder. So, I mean, these are things that are going to come up. And you can take your sides on all this, but it's going to come into this whole scandal. Some people are going to say that the Pope is doing this to engage the liberal left on his side. My point is that what came across my mind, there is enough confusion in the church already. John Paul has already come out and said in the Catechism that if the death penalty isn't necessary to protect society, it shouldn't be used. Aaron Wolf charges, and there are going to be other people within the church charge, that the death penalty's prime purpose is not to protect society or deter crime, although it does that, that its prime purpose was to restore justice, you know, in this world, and to restore, you know, to bring retributive justice to the people who have been severely wronged, either by their lives being taken or something else of great value be taken in a way that can't be restored. So with that, I'll go into what the Catholic Register says, the Catholic hierarchy themselves are saying about his teaching on the death penalty. And these are things that will bear on this whole scandal issue. Bishop Frank Duane of Venice, Florida, he agrees, I think, with the Pope. He says in an August statement that framed the revision as a further development of recent papal teaching, and that it is. Pope Benedict XVI, he noted, had urged the attention of society leaders to make every effort to eliminate the death penalty. Again, Aaron Wolf over on the Protestant side, and many Catholics as well on the Catholic side, say that's not the primary purpose of the death penalty. In line with the teaching of his immediate predecessors, Pope Francis is consolidating Catholic teaching against the death penalty and proposing the rejection of capital punishment as a development of doctrine, tweeted Robert George, professor of jurisprudence at Princeton University and a prominent Catholic public intellectual. But then there's a disagreement with this in the church. Bradley Lewis, a political philosopher at the Catholic University of America, who specializes in Catholic social teaching, challenged the characterization of the revised language as a development of doctrine and not a break with the church's past teaching. He challenged that. He's saying, in effect, it is a break with the church's past teaching. He says, at a very basic level, there seems to be a pretty significant change here. What was admissible, at least in some cases, is now simply inadmissible, Lewis told the Register, as he compared with John Paul's limited acceptance of capital punishment in very rare cases with Pope Francis's judgment that the practice is inadmissible. John Paul didn't go as far. He left it more open that it's a matter of prudence whether we use it or not. So that still leaves open the belief and idea that the church taught that the death penalty was not to deter crime or to simply punish, but it was to restore justice. So, and he goes on to say, if the death penalty can never be justified, then traditional moral analysis would describe it as an intrinsic evil. If that's the case, you can see where it applies to abortion. Because the church considers, and Pope Francis himself has come in and said that abortion is an intrinsic evil. So now, in effect, if the death penalty is inadmissible, Bradley is saying that the Pope is now saying that the death penalty is an intrinsic evil. But if it is, then what about the earlier teaching of the church in our tradition? Is that a transgression of tradition and not a development of doctrine? I mean, I taught RCIA, and I always taught the people there that development of doctrine means that, you know, we don't say that a dog changes into a cat. We just understand the dog more fully than we did before. But is this, in effect, changing the dog into the cat? It seems that Bradley is saying it is. And Edward Fazer, the co-author of By Man Shall His Blood Be Shed, A Catholic Defense of Capital Punishment, and he has challenged John Paul's teaching on the death penalty, also took a critical view of Pope Francis's revision of the catechism. You know, and Fazer is a philosopher, a good writer, an author, and, of course, a traditional Catholic. So he says that not only has Pope Francis gone further than his predecessors and judged capital punishment to be inadmissible in every case, he had justified this claim on doctrinal grounds rather than the prudential grounds that John appealed to. So he is saying, in effect, that the Pope is changing doctrine. So what I'm saying here is you've got a huge controversy brewing right here in the church when this scandal is going on, and it is going to cross the minds of a lot of people that this is being done by the Pope, whether it's true or not, in order to create a smokescreen. But even if it's not true that the Pope did it for that reason, is this a proper time to do it? I mean, will the result from this pronouncement and change of the catechism, will the result of that be commensurate with all the problem it's going to cause? I mean, after all, John Paul already said that if it's not necessary, then we shouldn't use it. So why go further right at this moment in church history? I mean, we have been a divided church ever since Vatican II, and it's getting worse, and we've got to deal with this scandal, and now this is coming in. So, you know, what I'm trying to say here is that these things, you have to be addressed.
Right. They do have to be addressed, but not maybe not. I think we got one thing we've got to straighten out first. And that's, you know, the homosexual, the abuse of children, and the homosexuality in the church. Now, as far as the death penalty goes, tell you the truth, I'm not sure how I feel about that. Deep down, I think there is a side that the argument that if you don't have to kill somebody, if you can restrain them and so forth, and give them time to repent, you know, show them God's mercy. But on the other hand, should somebody be let go for, you know, some people just can't function.
But
they even commit murder in the prison. So, you know, when is the death penalty the thing to do?
Well, the point is that is it or is it not a means of justice? And is it or is it not, you know, in keeping with the traditional teaching of the church, even if it should be very, very carefully and restrictively used? That's the question.
Well, yes, it is. But there's another question comes to my mind. It struck me that, okay, you're going to talk about this now? Again, go back to that. Why now? Is this a sap to the liberal side of the church?
That's what a lot of people are going to be wondering, or not only to the liberal side of the church, but also,
because, you know, then we're falling into where the liberal people that agree with the idea of abortion is okay, you're falling in with them because they're saying to the church, if you approve of the death penalty, then you can't say anything about abortion.
All right. Is it a sop to the secular liberalism that opposes the death penalty in order to enlist it on the side of the Pope and the hierarchy to, you know, to try and somehow or another oppose the charges that are being made against it? This is the problem. And let me, you know, you're bringing up a very good point. Let me help make it even better for you from the Catholic Register, and then I'll end with this, and we can talk about what you're talking about for the rest of the show. But here is another member of the church, Gerard Bradley, a professor at the University of Notre Dame Law School. Now, he's on the side of the Pope's pronouncement on the death penalty, but he says, It is very important, however, that the church's pastors present this new teaching to the faithful in the way that does not, repeat, not undermine the faithful's confidence in the constancy and authority of the church teaching, and so make this an occasion for people to think that this pope is likely to change church doctrine on, say, contraception or homosexual relations, just the way he did on capital punishment. I'm asking, Lynn, is that possible in this kind of a climate? Is it possible that the church could possibly present this in some way that won't confuse the parishioners, that won't confuse the Catholic laity even more? Is it possible? I don't think it is.
Not right now, I can't see where it is. We're very confused now, and they don't get it. You know, the hierarchy doesn't get it. All these misbehaviors have been going on right in the Vatican under the Pope's nose, right under the apartment below him. The Vatican police had to go in and get the male prostitutes out of there.
Well, see, all of this is going to come back, and again, it's going to make it even more likely that people will be suspicious of the Pope's actions on this thing. Was it really prudential to do this now? And this Professor Bradley, like I say, he's saying that this has to be done in a way that won't undermine the faithful's confidence in the constant teaching of the church. But I think it's going to even more. I mean, there's going to be a demand now that, well, you know, this for an approval of homosexual relations, just like secular society is being led into approving of it. Will this change the church doctrine on that? A lot of people will think that it's possible to do that. And it makes me wonder, is it possible now that we could change actually dogma? I mean, is this prudential for the Pope to do this? So,
no, I don't think so. That's my opinion. And what about Benedict? Why is he, has he retired?
It says, indeed, news headlines that frame the revised text of the catechism as a major change in church teaching could complicate any efforts to clarify the full context of the Pope's development of doctrine in the case of capital punishment. This is what that Jared Bradley is saying. He said it could, you know, in other words, it could complicate the Pope's efforts. Well, if it could, and Bradley admits it could, and I think that it's bound to, it already has, then why did the Pope choose it at this time? Is it, you know, was it prudential to do so? Is it going to change anything that much and that important to do so? I don't think it will. And I don't think it's prudential, and I don't think the people who are in favor of abortion are going to be changed at all by it. They're, you know, and I don't think that it's fair to compare abortion and the death penalty anyway. So there's my standing. So I'll end with that. And any more comments from you, Lynn?
Well, as Franciscan, I have to say, it puts puts us in a position where, you know, we believe that do everything possible to avoid serious conflict. Well, why did he take the name Francis? He's causing all this turmoil in the church and so forth. It just doesn't seem right. He's not representing what Franciscans would represent. He's a Jesuit. He should live up to his own. I just get very upset about it.
Well, I can understand. There are a lot of people getting upset on both sides. I don't think it's helping, but here it is. And we are going to have to deal with those things. And so for Catholics who are listening to this program, I think it's something you should think through deeply. And we don't know what the answers are, and we don't know what's true or false on all sides. It goes further here that Cardinal Vigano has called for the resignation of Francis. I think I agree with Cresta that at this point, on the basis of one testimonial from Cardinal Vigano, that, you know, that's not feasible. We shouldn't be calling for the resignation of Francis. We should certainly be calling for a deep investigation, and we should be calling for some answers from Francis himself as to what's going on here. And this needs to be investigated all the way to the very root. And as traditional Catholics, we should understand that this is not and shouldn't be and can't be an opening to somehow or another changing church dogma and doctrine, because that can't be changed. And if it is changed, It means the whole basis, not only of the church, but of Western civilization is being pulled down. Our Western civilization is already in enough dire trouble, and there's going to be no fixing it unless there is a moral place to stand, and that place has historically and traditionally been the Catholic Church. And we need to do everything we can as Catholics, no matter what your opinions are, to strengthen the church.
That's certainly true. And we should pick up our rosaries. They say that's the best, most effective weapon against Satan, who is at the in the background of all this. We've got to find a way to combat, and use of a rosary certainly would do it. I did want to say, too, in closing, that I'm very upset that the church should be put in this situation and what's happening with Pope Francis, because it's like a political ploy. Let's move people's attention to something else.
Well, you're right. People are going to draw that conclusion. We don't know that it's true. We're not saying, and Lynn's not saying that it's true.
No, I'm not.
But we're saying this is what is going to be one of the issues.
Look at the possibilities.
And so at any rate, we're going to have to stop here. We're coming to the end of our show.
Sure is.
But we're going to need lots of prayers for the church. And as Bishop Athanasius Schneider said, there should be a call for prayer and fasting and serious thinking on the part of all Catholics, and to start putting down your quick conclusions and thinking things through a little bit more deeply. But at any rate, in closing, let's go to our prayer to St. Michael. We need his help more than ever before. St. Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the Heavenly Hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits that wander for the world for the ruin of souls. Amen. We'll see you next week. God bless everybody out there.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.